You're listening to the Free Oromia podcast, dedicated to amplifying the voices of freedom. Thanks for tuning in to the Free Oromia podcast. Visit our website at freeoromia.org. Follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Team Free Oromia, and like our Facebook page at facebook.com/Team Free Oromia. You can also give us a call on the Free Oromia podcast hotline at 430-755-0727 and leave us a voicemail asking us questions or giving us your feedback. Make sure you subscribe and leave us a review wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Hello and welcome. You are listening to the Free Oromia podcast, a podcast dedicated to amplifying the voices of decolonization, freedom, and independence. I'm your usual co-host, Jal Ango, and I'm joined by my fantastic, also usual co-host, Jal Maro. Hello, Jal Maro.
Hello, good morning.
Good morning, good morning, good morning. How are you on this fine January day?
A little cold, but otherwise I'm doing well, thanks. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. I was gonna say the cold thing is very relatable. Winter is not my favorite time of the year, let me tell you that much, even though I'm born in winter. I think this will be our first episode of 2022 when it's released, isn't it? So
yes.
So happy new year
into another year.
Yes.
Yeah, that's crazy. We're now spanning episodes in 3 different years. That's cool.
Oh gosh, yeah, that's
true. We started in 2020. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh my goodness, what a milestone! Nice. Oh, yeah. I like that perspective. That's really great. That's really great. I mean, we're only just about over a year old as a podcast, but I like looking at it that way. Yeah, we span across 3 years.
Yeah, we have our limbs in a few different years. So
yes, love it, love it. I hope we get stretched even further.
Yes, this will be a post-liberation podcast, hopefully soon.
Yes, oh god, yes, inshallah, can't wait for that day. Happy new year to our listeners also. You know, we hope you've had a wonderful start to 2022. Yes,
happy new year.
And we hope your year continues on in the most incredible manner that you can imagine. So here's to liberation in 2022.
Indeed.
So, today's topic is about what I think most of us have been talking, thinking, and reading about for the past few days, almost the past week now. And that is the recent release of OFC, Oromo Federalist Congress leaders, from unlawful imprisonment in Ethiopia. So a few days ago, the Abiy regime released several members of the OFC leadership from prison, including Bakala Gerba, Jawar Mohammed, Dejanet Afa, Hamza Borana, Shamsuddin Taha, Melissa Diriba, and several others as well. So we're now in the immediate aftermath of that release having taken place on the 7th of January, so last week, Friday. And I guess there has been a lot of thoughts, a lot of commentary around this situation. Jal Maro, what was your initial reaction to this news when you heard about it?
That is a loaded question. I feel like I had so many reactions.
Yeah.
I think my first reaction, I thought of, you know, their families, and I thought, like, I'm so happy for their families because you know, not only are they well-known figures in Oromo society, beloved to many, but they're also fathers, husbands, sons, friends, and they've been absent from the lives of their loved ones for far too long. And so that was one of my first thoughts. And then also, you know, just thinking of how many Oromo people have just been advocating so hard for their release for the past year and a half, I was happy for them as well. But obviously, you know, this regime is finally releasing political prisoners that have been unlawfully detained for, again, a year and a half. So that's not justice. And, you know, I was just kind of just, you know, going back and forth between these things, right? Like, okay, on the one hand, this is good news. And I'm really happy that, you know, people have their father back, their husband back, their son, you know, but it isn't justice, right? So it's hard to, you know, it's kind of hard to see it as something to celebrate, because it's like, wow, you know, they should have never been imprisoned in the first place. So it almost feels like celebrating it is giving credit to this regime, when we know that this wasn't, you know, that this wasn't how it should have happened in the first place. I was also concerned for their safety, because you never know what this regime is up to, and you know, what exactly is the motive behind their release. And then obviously just thinking about the tens of thousands of other Oromo political prisoners who remain imprisoned, including many OLF leaders and members, journalists, you know, so many other people as well. So it was a little bit confusing, like how to feel about it. What about you?
You know, I share your sentiments, honestly. I think my initial reactions were relief. You know, I can't say that I ever felt a sense of joy about it, actually, because I think my feelings were very much marred by a sense of apprehension and anxiety and uncertainty about what was going to happen to them. But I did definitely feel a lot of relief. But, you know, like you say, I didn't feel like I could be happy or be in a celebratory mood, because it wasn't a genuine freeing of these political prisoners, because, you know, as you mentioned, there isn't any real accountability for the way in which they were wrongfully imprisoned. You know, there is no justice system that in Ethiopia that can hold the state to account for unlawfully imprisoning them. You know, in fact, the regime are posing themselves as being benevolent pardoners and, you know, allowing terrorists to go free for the sake of Ethiopia, and, you know, for the sake of the cohesion of the Ethiopian state, you know, which is complete nonsense. So the framing around the release is entirely off kilter. And, you know, as you were as well, I was very worried for their safety after they had been released. And they actually initially refused to leave the prison when the release order came, because it came late in the day. So it was already dark outside, they feared for their own safety. You know, they weren't sure what would happen to them after they leave the prison, you know, in the darkness of night. But then in the end, they did still leave the prison on that same day, you know, with a lot of security reinforcements to make sure that their safety wasn't compromised. But yeah, you know, I think I can't feel happiness because there's no real accountability. There's no real justice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I completely agree. And I think just as you said, the biggest feeling of conflict is just knowing that this isn't a goodwill gesture on the part of the regime, but it is being claimed as such and being treated as such. Mm. And even from people who aren't necessarily saying that, you know, from Oromo people who are just celebrating, and we can't necessarily, I mean, we can't stop people from celebrating, but, you know, people are entitled to feel or do, you know, whatever feels right to them. But I think even without implying that, oh, you know, thanks to Abby, this happened, it kind of just inherently leaves things susceptible to being misconstrued, right?
Yeah. Celebrating and being happy and joyful about this, you know, lends credence to the narrative that the state is putting out, maybe.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. That's exactly what I was trying to say, Jalango. Thank you for completing my sentence there. So, you know, on this note, right, there were quite a few political prisoners released, right? And we are relieved about that. But again, we can't help but think about the tens of thousands of other Oromo political prisoners that remain imprisoned unlawfully. So as part of that, you know, many OLF leaders, members, and alleged supporters remain imprisoned, and the OLF president remains under house arrest. Why do you think, Jalango, that only a certain segment of Oromo political prisoners were released? And just to add into this, it might also be worth mentioning that it wasn't only Oromo political prisoners that were released on January 7th. It was also TPLF leaders and some Amhara opposition leaders as well. So in this context, right, of this, you know, somewhat large scale release of prominent political prisoners from different nations and nationalities, right? What do you think is the reason why, you know, this particular group of Oromo political prisoners was released, were released as part of this?
Well, you know, the regime is positioning itself now as the facilitators of a new national reconciliation dialogue, right? And this release of political prisoners is supposed to be a goodwill gesture to signal to the nations and nationalities of Ethiopia that the state will allow for their voices to be inclusively represented in this fresh iteration of a national dialogue.
Supposed and- to be, keyword.
Yes, yeah, yeah, exactly. Supposed to be. And so, you know, I think the release of the OFC leaders is highly performative and perhaps an attempt to appease a significant enough portion of the Oromo nation and create an illusion of real inclusion in this national dialogue to be able to proceed with their agenda, right? And I think that the state very clearly recognizes that the OLF poses one of the biggest threats to the supposed legitimacy of the Ethiopian state. And contending with that threat from the OLF probably felt like, you know, the combined threat of the OLF and the OFC being present at the table and representing the Oromo people was too much to tangle with. You know, so I think this is the regime very performatively just trying to bring a manageable portion of Oromo representation to the table, and, you know, trying also to stifle the momentum and the progression of the Oromo liberation struggle by not making it a genuinely inclusive dialogue for the Oromo people. So that can only be the reason why, because if you look at the reasons why they imprisoned the OFC leaders and the OLF leaders in the beginning, it's the same. You know, they were sort of imprisoned on the same terms, and they were kept imprisoned on the same terms, but now they're not being released on the same terms. So I think it just really reinforces the fact that this isn't a genuine or a truly inclusive attempt at a national dialogue. And the Oromo nation needs to proceed with extreme caution and with extreme skepticism, and, you know, with the ability to see through the performative acts of the Ethiopian state maintained as intact as we possibly can, as things progress forward. But yeah, what was your take?
Wow. Like, that was so well stated. I really don't have too much to add. I completely agree with you there. I think you covered everything I was thinking of on this topic. So that was very well said.
thanks. It's what we do, you know. We complete each other's sentences and, you know, think the same things. And is that a good thing? Are we an echo chamber? Well, it is what it is.
Well, no, I don't think we're an echo chamber, right, guys? We're not. But Jalango is so intelligent and well-spoken that sometimes I'm just like, yeah.
Oh dear, stop. Well,
cosign, you know. Retweet.
Well, it's mutual. The feeling is mutual.
Yeah. But like, main takeaway, I completely agree that like, this is basically a major, like, giant red flag waving in your face that this is not a goodwill gesture. Like, this is not a goodwill gesture. That is the clearest sign that we have. Obviously, there are so many other signs, right? This regime, Abiy's regime, is continuing to attack civilians with drones, right? So, you know, with this background of war on Oromia, that this isn't a goodwill gesture, but also this imbalanced and incomplete release of political prisoners, I think, also clearly underscores that point as well.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, besides this, like you say, imbalanced release of political prisoners, on the day of their release, as you mentioned, the regime was bombing civilians in West Wallaga and in North Shawa with drones. They, according to reports, they hit a school in a place called Dara, and both a school and a coffee processing center in Begi. And, you know, they killed dozens of civilians with these drone strikes. So this continuation of massacring Oromo civilians is, I think, as much signaling as we need, to be honest, aside from what they're doing in the political sphere.
Yeah.
So after the prisoners were released on the 7th of January, there was a lot of anticipation around what the newly released political prisoners would say, you know, what their first sort of public statement would be. And on the 10th of January, so Monday just gone, the OFC did release a statement, which was written by the leaders who had been released from their wrongful imprisonment. So I'm sure most of us will have seen and read that statement. So what were your reflections on the statement when you read it, Jal Maro?
So I had a lot of different thoughts reading it, reading the statement. First of all, I think a lot of it was diplomatic talk, which I think is expected, right? A lot of, you know, the framing and the language used, it's diplomatic talk. They, you know, just a couple of things. They called for the immediate and unconditional release of all other political prisoners, which is expected. But overall, my takeaway was the focus of the statement was on negotiation and a dialogue as a solution. One thing that stood out to me, I think it was a little later on in the statement towards the bottom, they state that they, quote, continue to believe war is not a solution to Ethiopia's complex political crisis, and only a serious and genuine negotiation and dialogue among nations and nationalities of this country can lead to lasting peace and mutually advantageous coexistence, end quote. So I think that kind of was the overall spirit of this statement, and everything else kind of supporting that. And, you know, but that was the overall goal that was kind of stated is the war should end and there needs to be a genuine negotiation and dialogue. They also stated at the start of the statement that this will require, quote, genuine political will and good faith engagement from all stakeholders. So, I mean, this would be ideal, right? I mean, frankly, the Oromo Liberation Army has also called for the same thing. The Oromo Liberation Army has repeatedly called for a cessation of hostilities. And for there to be a genuine dialogue. I don't think anyone is in favor. Nobody is in favor of a war. What we, you know, ideally what we want is a dialogue that can actually bring about something positive. I think that the issue is that is when you have a regime that's actively attacking civilian populations, you can rule out the genuine political will and good faith engagement from the side of the regime, right? At least as far as, you know, most observers are concerned. So when you believe that this violent regime is incapable of genuine participation in peace talks, when you refer to, you know, all warring parties, I think it can be a little bit challenging. A little frustrating. And I know that, you know, some of that kind of phrasing, I think, ruffled some feathers. Would you agree, Jalango? And caused maybe a little bit of confusion, too. So, you know, one thing I would have liked to see as it relates to the topic of war that was mentioned in the statement, I would have really liked to see a clearer distinction between the aggressors and the self-defense forces.
Yes.
So, you know, a clear distinction between the regime forces, which are the perpetrators in this situation, and self-defense forces such as OLA, the Oromo Liberation Army.
Yes.
Because one thing that we know is that there has been a policy of disarmament enforced specifically on Oromo communities since, you know, for years, for centuries.
Yeah.
And so that I think that was my main concern. But beyond that, I mean, I don't think the messaging was really shocking because regardless of the political party or the entity, Oromo bodies have always been pro-peace. Even the Oromo Liberation Army, like I mentioned, has consistently called for a cessation of hostilities. And for genuine dialogue, all-inclusive dialogue, though, which is not what's on the table in this situation, right?
No.
And I do think that at this point, that really needs to be clearly acknowledged. But beyond those things, Jalango, I don't think the messaging in the statement was really shocking, because this has generally always been the stance of the OFC, right?
Yeah, I agree. I agree. I wasn't surprised either by the contents of the statement. You know, like you mentioned, I think it was very much in line with the sort of party politics of the OFC. It's certainly very consistent. You know, I read that statement and, you know, it felt as though it was a statement that could have been released a few years ago at the beginning of this transition. This transition? not this transition.
the beginning of this regime?
The beginning of this regime. Yeah, exactly. The first failed transition, put it that way. You know, I feel like the statement could have been released back then, and read almost exactly the same, apart from the sentiments about wrongful imprisonment. And I think also that that's kind of the problem with it. Although it is very consistent, you know, from the OFC, and reflects the position of the OFC, the unchanged position of the OFC, I just don't know whether that position is actually tenable any longer. You know, I don't know if what has been expressed within the statement, at least, you know, we don't know what's being said behind closed doors. You know, we don't know what the sort of greater intentions may be. But from what we can see, at least, and from, you know, the information that has been put out into the public sphere, I don't quite feel that the statement properly addresses the context of the current situation. You know, I think there's a deference to the Ethiopian state as the kind of overarching legitimate body in these circumstances that needs to be related to, and I find that in itself to be a problematic paradigm at this stage in our struggle. You know, I find it to be unimaginative, quite frankly, in how it proposes to address the issues that the nations and nationalities in Ethiopia face. I also very much agree with you about the jarring lack of nuance in terms of the warring factions that are referred to within the statement. It lumps together all entities that are participating in armed confrontation, doesn't reflect the imbalance of power between the entities that are involved in military confrontation, and doesn't reflect the purpose either, like you mentioned, behind each group's mobilization.
Exactly, because even though, yes, there are multiple, quote, warring parties in this war, in this civil war, in this conflict, however you want to label it, ultimately, there are really two major sides of this, which is the regime that even before it was, you know, a full-blown war, was perpetrating state-sanctioned violence against civilians from the beginning. And on the other hand, you have defense forces that are, you know, liberation forces, forces of different nations and nationalities that are trying to protect their populations from the aggression of the state. And these, you know, these different, quote, warring parties, in terms of the self-defense side of things, they also have a united front. They have, you know, some form of a coalition that is being developed. So, you know, even though you can kind of just say warring parties as this just kind of blanket statement, really, there's two sides of what's going on, regardless of the fact that there are different entities acting in, you know, their own manner and their own interests. I think some of the language here, right? So there's a part that says, you know, calling on external actors to play a positive role as far as ending the war and not providing political or material support to the warring parties. And they specifically mention countries in the Red Sea area as well as the international community, right? So one could read between the lines and infer that they're referring to countries that are providing drones and other military supplies to the Abiy regime, right? But I think with the way this is worded and just some of the language throughout, because of the fact that you have to read between the lines to draw that conclusion, someone can also read between the lines to draw a different conclusion. And I think that's the main concern. And some people have been really bothered by this, as we've seen. I think our, you know, what's so bothersome always is when things like this then cause division.
Because
you know, people have such different interpretations of things, and you know, that also lends itself to inferring much more that isn't even on paper.
I completely agree. I think, you know, it is a problem that the lack of nuance, you know, allows for the language that has been used to be construed in a manner that can suit a number of perspectives. And I don't think that's helpful. And I think one particular choice of language that I actually took some issue with in the statement is the portion where they, quote, call on the nations, nationalities, and people of Ethiopia to resist the ongoing civilian militarization, hate mongering, and unbridled call to arms. We also call on the media to play its part by refraining from broadcasting partisan narratives and fanning hateful propaganda. So, again, I think that can be read as referring to take an example, the Fano militia, who are militarizing specifically for the purpose of attacking other nations and nationalities, you know, in an attempt to subdue them and in an attempt to maintain the status quo of the Ethiopian state and, you know, in an attempt to maintain its imperial foundations. But this term of civilian militarization pretty much defines what Wobo is. Wobo, the Warana Bilisoma Oromo, or OLA, the Oromo Liberation Army, is a guerrilla force. And guerrilla forces are, by definition, militarized civilians. So, you know,
on the flip side, it could also refer to the recruitment of civilians forced or not to the state forces, to the Ethiopian Defense Forces.
And yes, it's just, yeah.
it could really refer to any of those things. And I think it completely depends on who's reading it and how they want to utilize that statement or information.
Yeah.
Again, it's like, I mean, kind of like you were saying this. So you kind of framed it as this could have been something released a couple of years ago. I think in a lot of ways, it could also be something released by kind of a third party observer or an international type of body. And again, I just want to underline, like, we don't know what's happening behind closed doors. We don't know the specific thought process that was put into all of, you know, the language here. Obviously, it was very well thought through. But nonetheless, listeners, this is just our interpretation and our, like, our thoughts on how this language comes across and some of the concerns that we have about it. But I just wanted to also recognize that there are a lot of factors that we can't speak for. I mean, obviously, like, we are concerned for their safety.
Yes.
And you know, all of those things.
Yeah, exactly. I think, you know, the only way to know more about what the OFC intends and how they plan on navigating this extremely precarious situation is to just wait and see. You know, and in the meanwhile, engage with everything that is done in the interests of the Oromo Nation in good faith. And, you know, maintain a united front, because I think that's the most important thing that we need to bear in mind and that we need to do right now.
So, Dal Ango, just going back really briefly, I think we've touched on this in some ways, right? But do you think a national peace dialogue is the solution at this moment to attain peace and security in Oromia? And if that national dialogue were to happen, what sort of preconditions should we require? And who are the stakeholders that must be at the table? And also, who should run this process?
Well, I mean, I'll answer your question backwards and start with the last bit, which is definitely not the Ethiopian state. definitely not the Abiy regime. Definitely not the PP conglomerate. Definitely not them. Number one. You know, just about almost anyone else, but definitely not them. But no, I mean, in all seriousness, I think an impartial third party, I think, would be the best bet in terms of who facilitates the process. I don't want to say run the process. I think, you know, it should be collectively run by all of the participating stakeholders, but I think it should be facilitated by an impartial third party, one that is equally trusted by all of the stakeholders. And I mean, in regards to the main question, whether a national peace dialogue is the solution at this moment, I think a national is not an accurate term, I think, but a multinational peace dialogue could be the solution at any stage. You know, I don't think there is ever a time where dialogue, genuine dialogue, isn't helpful. You know, I don't think there's anything.
Well, I think it's unhelpful if the preconditions aren't met.
Right.
So
yes.
I agree with you. Yeah. Basically.
Yeah.
I think that's where you were going too. Like,
yeah,
it can be a help. It can be the solution today. If those preconditions were met.
Exactly.
And if not, it will never be helpful. It will only work in favor of those with power, which is the regime.
Yeah, the state. yeah Yeah, exactly, exactly. It has to be genuine. It has to be a dialogue that equally represents all of the legitimate voices at the table. And I say that to mean that Abiy's voice is not legitimate. Abiy and his regime's voice are not legitimate. I absolutely agree that all of the preconditions have to be met. And those preconditions are that all of our major stakeholders are present at the table. And that includes the Oromo Liberation Army, that includes the Oromo Liberation Front, and that includes the Oromo Federalist Congress. We need all of our major stakeholders or representatives to be present equally at that table to have a major say in how that dialogue proceeds. In those circumstances, I think dialogue can be conducive to, positive outcomes. But if those very basic preconditions, might I add, are not met, then it becomes rather pointless.
Yep, agreed.
And also bearing in mind that a seat at the table should not require, particularly in regards to the Oromo Liberation Army, should not require any compromise on what they are doing for the Oromo Nation and how they are going about doing what they're doing for the Oromo Nation. The Oromo Liberation Army's position and the Oromo Liberation Army's efforts and contributions need to be fully acknowledged, recognized, and respected. And it should be understood that what the Oromo Liberation Army does is what the Oromo Nation will fall back on if these dialogue proceedings don't continue in a way, exactly, don't go as planned, and don't work towards fulfilling the objectives of the Oromo Nation.
Exactly. I mean, that's what happened, a few years ago, right, during the quote transition. And the only reason that the Oromo Liberation Army is what it is today, is as strong as it is today, and the strongest it's ever been, and able to work towards securing Oromia right now, is because they didn't succumb to that at that time.
Exactly.
And so to expect them to do that now would just be preposterous.
Exactly. Frankly. Exactly. Basically, the dialogue and the activities of the Oromo Liberation Army are not mutually exclusive, and that needs to be recognized collectively. So I guess in conclusion, Djalmaro, what do you hope will happen moving forward from where we are now?
Well, Djalango, I think you kind of touched on this, at some point earlier, but really what I hope to see moving forward is, from Oromo bodies and political groups and leaders, I just really hope to see them working in the same direction in a more unified voice. Because regardless of what Abiy and, his regime do next, we have to be ready for that.
Yeah.
And so I think that means strengthening all areas of our struggle, right? Mm-hmm. It means strengthening our politics and having our political groups be on the same page and acting in unison to the maximum extent possible. It also means continuing to support WABO. We don't really have too much room to slip up here. So no. That's what I hope to see. What about you?
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I think you've summed it up quite well. I don't think I have that much to add to what you said, to be honest. Just emphasizing that need for unity. That's really the be all and end all. It has always been our be all and end all. And I think our shortcomings in achieving that is what's prevented us from getting to that stage of the be all. and, you know, teetering on the edge of end all, but at certain stages. But yeah, you know, I think the momentum is in our favor. The momentum has been in our favor, you know, in large part thanks to the Oromo Liberation Army for a while now. So we need to capitalize on that by strengthening our unity more than ever. And, you know, of course, I also hope to see the rest of the Oromo political prisoners and all Oromo people who are unlawfully detained in Ethiopia to be released. You know, that's what I hope to see in the very immediate future. You know, I want to see all of the OLF leadership freed, and I want to see every Oromo and other civilians who have been unlawfully detained in Ethiopia released from their imprisonment. And you know, if that doesn't take place, you know, like we said earlier, I think we can pretty much assume that the dialogue that's being pressed forward with is destined to fail. It's doomed because, you know, the intent for true peace is simply not there.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Without the release of, you know, the OLF leaders, members, without the release of the rest of the OFC members and supporters, without the release of journalists and activists and anyone else who's a political prisoner right now, there is no genuine dialogue. There is no good faith negotiation happening. So exactly. That needs to be clear first and foremost when we're talking about this particular topic. So
yeah,
completely agree.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm very certain that many of our listeners will have a lot of thoughts on what we've discussed today. You know, so as always, we love to hear from you. We want to hear from you. So please feel free to call us and leave us a message to tell us what you think about our conversation. Our hotline is +1 if you're calling from outside of the United States, and then 430-755-0727. Or of course, you can DM us on our social media. Our handle is @TeamFreeOromia on Twitter and Instagram. So, love to hear from you. Let us know your thoughts. And I think all we can do now is just keep up the pressure and wait and see what happens next.
Yes.
All right. So with that, I think we'll say goodbye for now, and we'll catch you in the next episode. Goodbye.
Catch you then. Goodbye. Thank you, Jalango.
Thank you, Janmaro. Bye. Chase,